Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies and, more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Jeff Hassan, strategist at Possible Mobile and author of three books, the most recent of which is The Art of Digital Persuasion. So we talked to Jeff from our studio in San Francisco for part two of a two-part series. So here's our discussion with Jeff. So your latest book, The Art of Digital Persuasions. So first of all, for those unfamiliar, tell us a little bit about the book at a high level. What were its goals going in? And how does that kind of branch from your second book, which was the most previous book, which was called The Art of Mobile Persuasion?
Right.
So you went from mobile persuasion to digital persuasion. And I imagine that's because the fragmented state of or the ever increasingly fragmented state of our kind of media touch points.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I say this in jest, we nailed it, right, Mike? I mean, all marketers understood how to use mobile, had the settings just right, and we just kind of had it on autopilot, right? Until emerging technologies, interfaces, behaviors came to play. Obviously, that's not the case, but some of the big violators use old playbooks. And if you want to get me started, ask me about when somebody sends me to a study and it's from 2015 and I'm supposed to use that in a current marketing plan. It just drives me crazy. But the reason I wrote this book is, again, that last one asked the question, is there place in this relationship between a user and a mobile device? Is there a place for a brand? But now we have voice, we have all of the emerging technologies that I mentioned earlier. So I went back to the well. I found 12 more really senior, accomplished global marketers, and I asked them the question under the theme of what now? And to drill down a little bit, I asked, where will we find our customers and prospects these days? That question is not as easily answered as it was when there were fewer screens and fewer interfaces. I asked, where do we want to lead them and what must they find when they get there? And I asked people like the head of digital at ESPN, do we need to create audiences or do we need to follow audiences? And his answer was both. The next question I asked was, how does this all affect the customer journey? I just presented some of the findings on this book, and I put up a slide that was a circular freeway system in some city. And that's not the customer journey. That's the marketer's journey these days. We're being thrown into circles trying to figure this whole thing out. And then something that is near and dear to my heart, this aspiration for personalization. You and I have probably talked about my stupid analogy or my stupid example of still getting meatball sandwich offers, even though I'm a vegetarian and a business should know better. Because I use that and I have forever in the example of the inexact, to use a kind word, way that people market to us and specifically to me. But for this book, I asked if personalization is this so-called North Star. How do we deliver this on these screens of today and knowing full well that there are going to be some screens tomorrow? And then finally, how does the relationship that we've built with consumers on mobile devices, either through apps or through other means, how does this survive, evolve, and thrive when attention is being drawn to even more places? And I found that there are some very specific actions that marketers have taken and are continuing to take, and not a big surprise. There are some marketing fundamentals that things like being human don't change with the technology. One of the great campaigns that I heard about, you might be familiar with this one. It's called Breaking Two. It was a campaign by Nike where they had elite runners try to break a two-hour marathon mark, something that had never been done before. And over 13 million people ended up watching this race on Twitter, more than the broadcast audiences of the New York, Chicago, and Boston marathons combined. And the aha of this is 13 million people clearly didn't think that they were an elite runner who could run something, run a marathon in under 2 hours. The insight or the commonality was everybody can appreciate the strive for a human achievement. And watching these people and being able to relate to these people try to do something that had never been done before was something that brought an emotional chord, made it relevant to people. And that's that be human. You know, is a conversation you and I could have had 30, 40, 50 years ago. And I'll bet that when I'm old and gray, you know, 50 more years from now, which I won't be walking around, but if we were to have this conversation, I think that still belongs on the list, things like that.
Yeah, that's great. And there's a certain amount of kind of irony there. I mean, it makes sense. But, you know, one kind of thread there is that media is and technology is fragmenting into all these different touch points, you know, home speakers, smart speakers, TVs, wearables, all these things, which we'll get into in a bit. And some of that could be argued is kind of deteriorating our humanism. But that humanism is really like the universal truth to go back to in really having effective marketing, it seems.
Yeah, and I was really pleased because the folks who I was fortunate enough to talk to, I mean, really senior folks, did not hype their technologies. They gave me some common sense thinking about it. And one of the people I'm referring to is Davis Biskey, who's the chief evangelist for Alexa at Amazon, and he talked about voice kind of taking us back to conversation and the way we used to communicate between a brand and a consumer and the importance of talk and you know, understanding and relevance and you know, and then you dig down a little bit deeper and you go, okay, so how do I deliver that on a device like this? What is it that somebody is going to be expecting or looking for? You know, and these are clearly, the early days. I have five of these voice devices, maybe six, around my house. Some of them actually conflict with each other. When I ask a question, two of them try to answer. But I'm asking, is it going to rain today? And even though it's I live in Seattle, and the answer is most likely yes. I'm still doing some of the basic functions that a lot of people are doing.
Yeah.
So you know, Dave was the first to admit that that we're not abandoning everything, or consumers aren't abandoning the behaviors and the devices that they're using today, but this stuff becomes complementary. You know, he talked tangibly about, well, maybe you're a travel brand, and what you need to do on voice technology is to become more of a concierge, and you can learn through machine learning and past purchase behavior, you might know something about a consumer and may be able to deliver a relevant experience. That you know, one of my frustrations is I've been a gold member in an airline club for 19 years, and I still get the same mass messages and emails from this airline that everybody else gets, which is ridiculous because they have 19 years of my history. They know the days, the times, the fares that I've spent, and I've never gone to Mexico with them. But yet they're introducing New Mexico cities, and they're presenting me with this information. And I'd argue that it would be better for them to understand that we go to Hawaii every year, and maybe the motivation would be to try to get me to go to Hawaii every 9 months versus every year,
yeah,
as opposed to giving me something that I just don't have any interest in.
Yeah, very interesting. So I want to kind of dive into some of the specific technologies. We kind of just mentioned a lot of them right now, and how they have kind of specific impact on marketers and tactics and evolution. But before we do that, while we're still talking about some of the specifics of the book, I should also ask, you know, you mentioned Nike. What were the kind of the names of the companies and execs that you interviewed, and who kind of stands out as really exemplifying some of the things we talked about earlier, such as, you know, having that humanity and also the adaptability to this changing landscape and fragmentation of technology and media. You know, we don't have to go too deep into how and what, but who kind of stands out as really just being the most adaptable over time and kind of carrying some of those universal tactics?
Yeah. Well, first off, so among the people, and I'm gonna forget names here, but
the company names are okay. Not just the execs.
Microsoft, Amazon, mm-hmm. Expedia, Google, Twitter, ESPN, Neiman Marcus are the ones that come to mind. To answer your second question, Ryan Spoon, who I think I mentioned earlier, SVP of Digital at ESPN. As you recall about ESPN, so ESPN tried to be everything for everybody, and even came out with the ESPN branded phone back in the day, you know, after the iPhone came out, and also had, I don't even think Ryan could give me the exact number of how many apps they had, out there in the field, but the great insight from Ryan among the things that he said was that quality always wins. And what he talked about that it's not about at the end of the year saying, let me look at my scorecard and see how many things have I done this year. The scorecard should be how many things have I done well this mm-hmm. year. And he said, quality always wins. And it's about creating fantastic experiences. So by no means does this book say check every box. This book says make sure that you have all of the pieces into place. You know, the commitment from senior executives, the understanding of what it is that you're trying to do, the KPIs that are attached to it. The gentleman Scott Emmons, who led the innovation lab at Neiman Marcus, told me he asked a very simple question: is this going to solve a problem or not? And he and you and I have walked many a hall at CES and South by Southwest, and we've seen some shiny stuff, but they're fool's gold in a lot of cases. So it really, in the world that we're living in at the present, there's such hype around foldable phones, Mike, and I'm not sure how you feel about them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not great. I think it's a gimmick.
Right. I don't know what problem that solves. And
it's the new curved LED, essentially, I believe, like in terms of its level of gimmick.
Right. And at $2,000 a pop, when we were already getting pushback and we already have fantastic devices in our hands now, so I don't really get it, but so the ESPN now creates fantastic experiences, you know, and they're very tailored to the channel. What they do on Instagram is different than what they do on Twitter versus what they do on a big screen. Sometimes the stuff is complementary. Sometimes around the biggest events, they have multiple initiatives going on. Like around March Madness, they have certain hosts that appeal to certain audiences on certain channels. So I think I learned a lot from Ryan about how again this quality play, and we should know this. And this goes back to if we had this conversation 50 years ago, if we have this conversation 50 years from now, that belongs on the list as well. Quality always wins. Do things fantastic in a fantastic way, or don't do them at all.
Yeah. I think one important point among many there is that content should be optimized to be native to the medium. So the message in the medium in cohesion, I think, is definitely an important lesson. So we're actually going to pause there for another commercial break. When we come back, more from Jeff Hassan.
Hi, everyone. This is Mike Bolin, lead analyst with Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Street Fight in 2019. So we've got lots of good things cooking and lots of opportunities for you to get involved. So we're looking for guests on this podcast. We're looking for editorial contributions from thought leaders. We're looking for inspiring speakers at our events. And all of that really comes together in the rich mosaic that you've come to know as Street Fight's thought leadership in location-based media and
advertising and commerce and innovation. And part of that formula are lots of opportunities to sponsor content and have your brand associated with that thought leadership. So stay tuned for lots more information and announcements for those rollouts, and reach out to us if you have any questions or want your voice heard in that chorus of narratives, including this podcast and messages like this one. So you can email me at michael@streetfightmag.com for more, and we're looking forward to working with you in 2019. So we're back. My guest is Jeff Hassan. So Jeff, before the break, we were talking about your book. We were talking about some of the highlights in terms of who's doing what right in the interview subjects you had for the book and some of those brands like Nike and ESPN and others. So another thread in the book, which we alluded to a few times, is how things are fragmenting, and that's causing challenges and opportunities. And we have media that's being delivered to touch points that include voice, which you actually mentioned. There's AR and visual search, there's wearables, there's, you know, 5G is not a delivery channel, but it is a factor that is starting to kind of alter strategies. There's a lot of things happening, and you know, the privacy issues, which could fill a whole episode. So rather than go through each of those and their implications, let's just drill down on one representative example. And I'm particularly interested in AR and visual search. And for the audience's benefit, to kind of define the question first, you know, there are many flavors of AR in terms of a lot of companies using it to visualize products. So try before you buy, put an IKEA couch there to see if it fits before you go through the hassle of buying it. There's also, in a broader sense, computer vision, such as what Google's doing with Google Lens. You point your phone at something and it, instead of typing in the words, it's more intuitive to point it and say, you know, that's a certain type of dog or flower or a pair of shoes, and a lot of implications there. And we talked about Nike earlier. I read this week that Nike's done something very interesting where they are bringing AR and computer vision into their fitting, which is a pain point because apparently, you know, it's like 6 in 10 people are walking around the wrong size pair of shoes, and they've been able to, with computer vision on a millimeter accuracy level, you know, be able to detect 26 points on your foot by doing a kind of scan with your cell phone, and from that extrapolate the exact right size for you. So I think it's just one example. So generally speaking, and with that example and bringing it back to Nike, what are you seeing there in terms of this visual medium, and what should brands know about making sure they're ready for that?
Yeah, I you hit and I know how deep you are in this category. You hit the current state of affairs rather accurately. I mean, we're looking to redo some rooms, and we were in Pottery Barn, and they were talking about, hey, you can do this, and you can see how this is going to look in your house. Earlier you said gimmickry. So you referred to something else as a gimmick.
The
foldable phone. So AR, I think at this point, it solves some problems, but it also has a gimmicky feel to it.
It does. It's both sides to it, I believe.
Right. And Ryan, referring back to ESPN, he said, for a marketer these days, it's about using it and understanding the technology, but not necessarily going all in on it. The very ways that are happening now, support the premise that there's some value here. And as we've seen historically, when your Apples and your Googles and your Facebooks get behind certain things, just think about boring QR codes. You know, back in my SMS days, we could not convince anybody that a QR code was as useful as an SMS message. Now you've got some of the big players who are using QR codes, and all of a sudden it's become
Snap codes are big.
Exactly. So I think going into a new city and using AR to understand my surroundings, and I get lost all the time. And I think things like maps while you're walking have underdelivered and have caused frustrating experiences, at least for me, in the limited times that I've used that. So I think this, with the key word being augmented, I think the augmentation done in a useful way, that by a brand makes that brand more valuable to a user. We're doing some of that, some AR at Possible Mobile. We're doing work with the PGA Tour to look at where shots landed, and to get a sense of someone's performance versus somebody else's performance. So I think there's a path here for it to be very meaningful. I think we're in the relatively early innings of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. That's well said, because it's still trying to find its legs, find its value, find its killer app, really.
Yeah.
And that's an experimental process that takes time. But in the meantime, there's a lot of kind of solutions looking for problems out there in that kind of gimmicky sense. So now we're going to move into our very quick lightning round. Just kind of quick hit answers from you about things that dive further into kind of who you are and what makes you tick. So first off, what's something about you that few people know about?
I've never been accused of being an athlete, in the subsequent hours to this conversation, Mike, I'm about to do my 300th ride on Peloton.
Oh, nice.
It sounds like you're familiar. So yes. It's a spinning bike. It's you could say it's combination technology.
They have exercise. A great business. They're killing it.
So I have never been in the shape that I'm in now. And I'm actually, self-motivated, although there's a lot of social aspects to it and high-fiving people, and it's not like I'm antisocial, but I just love this product to the point that it's been a year and 3 months, and I'm about to hit my 300th ride, and I've never worked so harder, but it's taught me lessons. I sound like the instructors and I'm drinking Kool-Aid here, but it's taught me transferable lessons off the bike, like the work is the work, and there wasn't a shortcut to write this book. I mean, there was a step by step by step, and I needed to take all those steps to get to where I needed to go, which was a good lesson professionally that transferred from this silly get on a bike at 4 o'clock in the morning and stream a class.
Yeah, absolutely. If you do a lot of traveling, I'd recommend TRX suspension training bands, because they pack easily and they're great. And I've been doing that a lot. So what's the profession you'd want to have if you weren't doing what you do now? You talked earlier about journalism and any other kind of things that you, if you weren't doing what you do now?
Yeah. Because you didn't put a qualifier and say it has to be something you haven't done before, if you said you have one job left, mm-hmm. and you could do it without the worries of, I would be a sports writer. Not a sports broadcaster. I love writing. Back to those transferable skills, Google I/O just happened, and I was asked work with teammates, but to, in the course of very short time, to figure out, so what is what's important here, understand some of the rules that you and I were trained on, the inverted pyramid, the most important things on top, all that kind of stuff, and I just loved that life. So I would do that again if I could.
Yeah, I think the best sports broadcasters are actually the former writers, like the PTI guys used to be at the Washington Post. Big fan of Bill Simmons, who of course was the ESPN Page Two. And absolutely, I think that skill set is invaluable. So what is a company or a tech startup, historical or present, that you think it would be most exciting to be part of in like early days?
I'm fascinated by Uber because
and they just IPO'd today, so good timing.
Right, I know I wouldn't have gotten into a room and been able to convince somebody that this was a different way to drive mass transportation, right? So if I'm thinking disruption, I'm thinking Uber. And then I live in Seattle, so you've got a lot of that going on at Amazon and at Microsoft and other places around town. But, and then in the world that I live in agencies and in startups, you hear the cliche of we want to be the next Uber. And these are, as few and far between. But, Amazon has this saying, we want to make history. And those are the things that really are exciting. There's obviously some uncertainty around that, but it, you know, it takes a certain stomach to live in that environment. But I would think it would be thrilling.
Yeah. And Uber, no one saw Uber coming, and it ended up being so native to its platform. It wouldn't have worked on the desktop. And I think that back to AR, that's what AR needs, is something that no one thought of, but it ends up being something that is truly native versus these gimmicky things. So I think there's, right. there's a lot of lessons there. So just two more questions. So what superhero power would you most want to have?
Superhero. So I would say X-ray vision, to look through the smoke and figure out what's on the other side. You know, back to the promises and the hype around technology and the things that the world that we're living in these days. I would like to be able to see through the smoke / BS in a better way than I do now.
Yep. And we often ask about passions or hobbies that help you mentally unplug. You mentioned Peloton. Any others you want to mention or go with that?
I mean, the other one, I think the Seahawks being in Seattle.
Nice.
And I remember reading, I hate to bring this up. We threw from the 1 yard line and lost the Super Bowl, but, and then somebody.
Well, I'm a Patriots fan. So that for me was a good thing.
But somebody wrote a post about, if you're so invested in it, the lows are really low, but the highs are really high.
There you go.
And you wouldn't have that high, which was the year before when the Seahawks won, and you wouldn't have the lows. So I think you have to kind of put that in perspective. But it's been a good community builder in Seattle. It's brought a commonality. My wife was never a sports fan, and now she put on Seahawk gear, and we'll root for the team. We've gone to games. We actually went to a Lambeau Field. She grew up in Wisconsin, so she had a Green Bay Packer shirt on. I had a Seahawk shirt on, and it was just one of those memorable experiences.
Yeah. Well, my condolences on Paul Allen, and I think you also bring up a good point in the highs and the lows. I mentioned I'm a Patriots fan. That also makes me a Red Sox fan. I grew up in New England.
Yeah.
We had probably the most historic lows and lows and lows and then highs and highs and highs, and it's, so that resonates with me. So that's actually all the time we have, so I want to thank you, Jeff, for spending time with us.
Of course. It's a pleasure. I apologize for not reconnecting for such a long period of time, but we need to do this more often and compare notes, and I want to learn from you.
Yeah, we'll have you on in your next kind of book tour.
I've been doing them every 5 years.
Nice. So, we'll have you back sooner than that. Yeah, we'll have you back sooner than that. So thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Also, stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.